Welcome into another What's Crackin' Wednesday, brought to you by the Hockey Writers. It's hosted by myself, Sean Raggio. You can find me on Twitter at Raggio9124. My guy up in Canada, Adam Kierzenblatt. You can find him at Adam K. Blatt. We are bringing you Seattle Kraken coverage, and today we're going to get a little bit of Stanley Cup final action as well. First, want to do some news and notes for the show off the hop. We're going to be switching to bi-weekly, at least to kick off the summer now. Middle of July might get a little hairy. I have to be away on a freelance job, so I'm not too sure how much time I'm going to have, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Now checking in, Adam, how you doing up there in the great white north?
Well, it's not very, white here.
Is it great, though?
It's always great. Exciting weekend, you know. We had the kickoff of the Canadian Football League. BC Lions scored, I think it was 52 points in their home opener. So, okay. Very exciting. Then, of course, you know, you have the Tampa Bay Lightning, as predicted, winning in six games.
As seven?
Predicted in six and one in six. So take that as you will. Prediction master once again. And then very exciting as Canada defeated the U.S. in the World U-18 Women's Hockey Championship. Mm-hmm. And, this was a tournament that a lot of people didn't think was going to happen. From conversations I was having with some people, the fact that it actually went on was like a little bit shocking to them because, you know, this is a tournament. I think it was canceled like twice or,
I did hear that. Something like that.
Yeah. So it finally got played. Canada won 3-2 against the U.S. in overtime. Canada not as dominant of this year, which is actually a good sign. So when Canada and U.S. are not dominating the tournament and they lose games, it's actually a positive because it shows that the rest of the countries are kind of catching up. So, but yeah, in the end, Canada pulls off the victory over U.S. Big shout out to Delta Hockey out here in, Vancouver. They did a great job. They had three players participating in the tournament. Tova Henderson, Jordan Baxter, and Haley McLeod brought home the gold to the Lower Mainland. So exciting to watch that. And yeah, it was, you know, even though hockey is starting to wrap up, there's still some excitement to look forward to as right after the draft, we also have the World Juniors, the Men's World Juniors that is taking place, I believe in July in Edmonton and Calgary. So even during the summer, we still get some hockey, which is pretty exciting.
That's something I'm really happy about. I always get through, they say there's the dog days of the season, but for me, it's the dog days of the summer where it's just completely dead. Not a lot of news, not a lot of stuff to watch besides old highlights, but you mentioned juniors. So let's talk about a junior who's currently playing in the OHL final. Ryan Winterton, third round, 67th overall for the Kraken last year's draft. He had a great year despite missing a chunk of the season. Only 37 games, but 20 goals and 46 points. Plus 35. He was almost a plus per game. And 23 penalty minutes. But we're in the playoffs. OHL final now. I think it was against Windsor, you said, correct?
Yes. He's in the OHL final versus Windsor at the moment. And game seven.
7 goals, 18 points, and 4 PIMs in 17 games. Tell me a little bit about what you definitely get to keep a bit closer eye than I do on junior players. Give me your thoughts and maybe give me what you think his ceiling is going to be for the Kraken.
Well, Ryan Winterton, you know, he's showing why the Kraken spent a third round pick on him. Now, this is probably a player that should have been a early second round pick, but he missed, you know, with COVID, they missed the entire year. Mm-hmm. And he's had some injury issues. You know, he only played 37 regular season games this year where he put up 46 points. He's got good size at 6'2", 190. Mm-hmm. But one thing that really impresses me is that he knows how to get shots off. So he knows you know, when he's not hesitant to shoot the puck, which is always a good sign. You know, when you get these players that are scoring like big numbers, but they don't have the shot velocity, it's a little bit deceiving when you look at it, because it's, you don't really know, like, there is a little bit that goes into that, as in if the player, like, they might have a high shooting percentage or something like that. But with Winterton, you know, 45 shots in 17 playoff games so far, that's a very encouraging sign. During the regular season, he had, I'm just pulling it up right here, 108 shots in 37 games. So, like, these are trends that are very positive to see. And he showed that, you know, he can play with guys like Mason McTavish, which, you know, that's an NHL, that's a player who started the year in the NHL right now, or started the year in the NHL. So it is a positive sign. I do think that Ryan Winterton is a player that has an opportunity to make the team, not next year. So next year would be the 22-23. Yeah. So next year would be the 22-23 season.
19-year-old season.
Yeah. So if we're looking at this, this is a player whose projected arrival into the NHL is probably 2025-2026. So not that far away, even though that does sound very far away. That's, we're looking at a player who potentially could start to make the NHL in about 3 to 4 seasons. Maybe not be like a player that is in the lineup every day, but a player kind of like Cole Lind, where, you know, he gets an opportunity later on in the season or something. And then that can translate to maybe a full-time job the next year.
You know, you mentioned Mason McTavish, and I feel like it kind of fits to a bit of a theme, especially because Winterton missed a chunk of the season. He's not, probably not getting as much attention as he really could be. He had Logan Morrison, 100 points, 34 goals. Avery Hayes, 41 goals. Now, these guys haven't been drafted, but the Bulldogs are also an older team, relatively speaking. You know, a couple 19-year-olds, a couple 20-year-olds high up there in their point production. And he's a bit down the list. And as you said, Mason McTavish scored 6 less points in 13 less games. And he has he's the one you're talking about, because he's a high, you know, he played time in the NHL. I think he's played on 4 or 5 different teams in like three or four different leagues in the past 2 years, something like that. And Jan Misak, who's also was taken second round by the Canadiens. So there are names ahead of him that might catch more recognition. And I think that's a really good thing for him, especially coming off a season that didn't happen last year and an injury season. You know, you look at someone who, as you said, could have gone in the early second round and then drops off. And yes, there was extenuating circumstances in this other context, but being able to fly under the radar might have been what allowed him to succeed. And do you think, and I'm sorry if I missed you specifying this while I was looking up those names, do you think that he's going to be in the OHL next year or potentially AHL? Because I know you said he has a chance to make the team 25-26, but where do you think he's playing next year?
Can't play in the AHL next year, so it is OHL.
Why is that?
Because he's too young.
Yeah?
You can't play in the AHL as a 19-year-old during the regular season. You can't play if you belong to a WHL team or an OHL team or a Cube team. You can't play in the AHL in your 19-year-old season unless you sign a professional contract after your season is complete.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, copy that.
But if you're a European player that comes over during their 18-year-old season, like Fabian Lysell of the Giants, and then you can play in the AHL during your 19-year-old season.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a little bit complicated. That's as we stand right now. That's actually something that they're trying, that the AHL wants and the NHL want to fix. They want 19-year-olds to be able to play in the AHL for the whole year. And of course the CHL is like, no. So we'll see what, that's actually something to watch, because that is a high argument point in the whole junior hockey spectrum.
From a CHL team perspective, obviously, if a guy is kind of an overager at that point, he's obviously ready to make the jump to pro, but he's going to put up 100-plus points for your team. You want to keep him. Do you think that it's well and good if he's going to play another year as junior, put up 100-something points and lead the team to a playoff run? Good? Or do you think it'd be better for prospect development if they can get that professional experience kind of earlier in their professional career? Or do you think it's subjective to the prospect? Because I think it's subjective to the prospect, the team, and where everyone's at. If you have a prospect who's scoring 100 points in junior, but he's going to get no ice time in pro, maybe it's better to give him that extra year at junior and he can lead the team on a playoff run.
So I can actually give an example here from the like Canuck organization, and that is Danila Klimovich, who was drafted 41st overall in last year's draft. So his rights belong to the Huskies, the Rue Noranda Huskies in the QMJHL. So the Canucks decided to keep him in the AHL rather than send him to the Q.
Okay.
He played 62 games and only had 18 points. And then he was like scratched during the season. You know, some people were arguing that he wasn't getting enough minutes. He wasn't giving enough opportunity. He didn't play in the two playoff games because he was scratched. So that's a situation where you look at it and you say, would he have been better playing and like putting up, you know, 90, 100 points in the queue, or would he have been better staying or in the AHL playing against older competition? Like, it's also a confidence thing. Like, mm-hmm. You know, if a player goes out and scores 45 goals or 40 goals in the queue, and then they only score, you know, like 8 goals in the AHL, that could be a problem.
It's kind of like I feel how top prospects are definitely rushed in to an NHL role. Case in point, Kaapo Kakko. He's making plays. He's made plays this past season that he wouldn't have dreamt of making in the NHL his rookie year. It's a confidence thing. And I definitely like that you hit on that point. I really like that you hit on that point, actually, because it's such a – it really is subjective because every player is different, right? You can't necessarily apply all the same practices to a prospect now that you did 10 years ago. So I think that it has to be looked at by a case-by-case basis and go from there within the parameters that you're allowed by the AHL, CHL that you were discussing.
Yeah, and interesting about Kaapo Kakko is that when you actually look at – I know he was scratched during game 6.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at Kaapo Kakko, he was like, from an analytics point of view, he was like the Rangers' best like offensive driver.
He was the player on the line that played well, but he didn't get any points. I feel like there's always that one player on a line or on a team who they'll play really well, but they'll be significantly less points than the other members of their line, relatively less points, depending on who's who. But there's always that one player who they do everything right. They're helping drive play, but they're just not getting on the score sheet. They're the third assist, you know? So that's funny. Do you have any last thoughts on Ryan Winterton? Maybe even on who's going to win the OHL final before we hop on?
I actually, you know, like I have no idea who's going to win that final. Like when I would have said the Bulldogs easy. But then when you get to game 7, it's just so hard to predict anything with the game 7. You know, like the Bulldogs were in control, I believe, in game 6. Like just I watched the game. I thought that they were like pretty much in control in like the first two periods. And then Windsor just like blew open the game. Yeah. So it's like, you know, we'll see. Winterton didn't play in that game 6. So, you know, when it comes to junior hockey, it's very hard to get answers on injuries and stuff like that. So based off of how he's played, I would have been very surprised if it was a scratch and not like an injury, but we'll see we'll see what happens with him. But I think that the Bulldogs definitely have I think that the Bulldogs are the better team, but I also don't think that if the Bulldogs make it to the final, I don't think anybody is beating Edmonton in the Memorial Cup. So
God.
At this point, so we'll see what happens.
They are a great team, the Edmonton Oil Kings. What was I going to say? Oh, it's kind of funny how they start them. It's like they start them young. You know, they won't tell you anything about injuries in junior. They won't tell you anything about injuries in pro. But we're going to jump from – no disrespect to the Calder Cup playoffs, but we're going to jump from the OHL final to the Stanley Cup final. I have my official predictions up in my weekly Lost and Found article, dropped every Monday on the website, the Hockey Writers website, hockeywriters.com. Not sure how long into the summer I'm going to continue that column, but it will be back next year. Also, side note, we're recording this on Tuesday, June 14th. Excuse me. Happy birthday to my cousin Nicholas, but also happy anniversary. It's been a year since my first article with the Hockey Writers, a year today. So that's pretty cool. Just realized that. So I thought that was cool that we're recording on that day, but we're talking about the Stanley Cup final now. We talked about this pre-show, and because the sky is definitely blue, we disagree on who's going to win. Now, when we discussed it, I didn't give a game prediction, but I'll give my game prediction at the end once I think about it a little bit more. You want to kick this off? You want to go? I would like to break this down into who's better in terms of offense, then defense, then goaltending, and then give our prediction if that's cool with you.
Okay, well, offense, offense. It's the Colorado Avalanche. Defensively, it is the Colorado Avalanche. And goaltending, it is the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Interesting.
That's how the series breaks down.
Interesting.
As a whole, the forward group is better for the Avalanche. As a whole, the defensive group is better for the Avalanche. And then Vasilevskiy is probably the best goalie in the world. So there's no competition there.
Okay.
You look at Tampa Bay, like, I know the big thing is, it's like, oh, they have Victor Hedman. It's like, okay, Cale Makar is just on another level. And then you have Devon Taves, you have Bowen Byram, you have the Johnson brothers that are playing like
brothers,
you know, stable defensively, which nobody thought was going to happen. And then, like, you know, that offensive group, like, it's very hard. It's very, very hard to, you know, produce offense when you're in your zone the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Rangers learned that. In the last series, like you can't produce, it's hard to produce offense off of rushes.
Are you saying that you want to score goals at 5-on-5? Is that something you're supposed to do in hockey?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I also agree with the Avalanche being better offensively. I wasn't necessarily meaning defense specific to defensemen. I was talking team defense. Would that affect your answer at all or no? I'm sorry.
So it doesn't, but I think that it's close. But if Nazem Kadri comes back, it's no longer close.
Okay.
But I'm also hesitant on saying when Nazem Kadri comes back, because it is a wrist injury as we understand. And I'm always a little hesitant with centers coming back from wrist injuries, especially on the faceoff dot.
That's a good point too. To me, I concur. Avalanche offense in terms of firepower you know what it is. I'm pretty sure they're the most goals scored in the playoffs, or at least the most goals per game in the playoffs. They bring the heat offensively. To me, yeah. Defense goes to the Lightning because I feel like they have more shutdown defenders, but they can still provide offense from the blue line. And B, because I think that if that shutdown line of Alex Killorn, I don't know why I second guessed that.
Brandon Hagel, Cirelli, and Killorn.
Yes, Brandon Hagel and Anthony Cirelli. Thank you for helping me get that one out. I think that if they could even, I'm trying to think of how I want to word this because I don't want to say they can beat the top guns. They can shut down. I don't want to say shut down the Avalanche's top guns because I don't think you can fully shut them down. But if they can limit the damage, I trust, and I'll transition it as I'm speaking. I mean, as I'm explaining, I trust that they can shut down those top guns. I trust Vasilevsky in a one-goal game more than Francouz or Kemper. And I think a lot of that will be because of that line just shutting them down or at least limiting it. Because if you – let's say you could give Makar, Taves, shout-out Quinnipiac, Makar, Taves, Landeskog, Rantanen, and MacKinnon, let's say you can give them three goals a game as a five-man unit. You can limit that to one or two goals a game, then you got Kucherov, you got Stamkos, Palat. Point's going to be coming back. If not game one, it sounds very likely for game two, according to paraphrasing a tweet that I saw before we got on the air. So if that can happen, I trust Vasilevsky, and I agree with, obviously, Lightning goaltending. Vasilevsky to shut the door more than I do Kemper or Francouz. Apologies if I'm saying his name wrong. And I have the Lightning winning the Stanley Cup for the third year in a row. Pat Maroon, the big rig, his fourth year in a row. And yes, I know the Oleksiak big rig, but.
Well, like, yeah, so you talk, love, it's a tale of the offense. So here, I'll give you a statistic here. So five on five primary chances contributed. This is like in the third round. So it's like how many times per game did a player get a scoring chance or create a scoring chance by making a pass or some, passing the puck, and then that leads to a scoring chance. So the top five from the third round alone were all Colorado Avalanches
players. But you also have to factor in the difference in and look at the difference in team and goaltender they went up against. They completely, especially with Saros down, like, God bless. I think it was Connor.
These aren't goals. These aren't goals. These are chances created. This has nothing to do with goals. This is, they create an offensive scoring chance or assist that made an offensive scoring chance?
And you're going to tell me that. Okay. Continue.
This is looking at how the defense of the other team was able to shut down the offense of that team. Okay. So in the top 20, yeah, you have what, 5, 6, 7, 8 of the top 20 are Colorado. And then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are Tampa Bay. And it's like, not like, you know,
the only team that gave them defensive competition was St. Louis, and they still beat them at 6.
Colorado was Edmonton was good defensively. I don't think people, I know people will look at the scores of the games, but Edmonton did do well defensively to an extent against Colorado. Colorado was just way too good,
basically.
It's just like wave after wave after wave. But the fact that, you know, Tampa Bay couldn't generate to that level that Colorado did against the Rangers, who are like the Rangers were giving up what, like 50 shots a game.
That's genius. Like,
yeah, exactly. So if you look at how the Colorado Avalanche or how the Edmonton and the Rangers, they were pretty much similar in defensive structure. It was just one had a really good goalie and one didn't. Like, so the fact that the Lightning couldn't generate to the extent that the Avalanche did tells me that the Avalanche may just run over the defense of Tampa Bay.
I think if that's going to happen, it's going to happen early in the series, and then Tampa's going to adjust similar to the Rangers series. I think that Tampa can play any way you want to play, but Colorado can't play any way you want to play. I think that if you want to play a 9-6 game, Tampa's down to do that. Colorado's down to do that. I don't think that Colorado's as capable or willing to play a 2-1 game as Tampa is. And I think that Tampa can out-muscle Colorado as well. I think Colorado's tougher than they may appear. But I think that Tampa's got the edge there as well.
But Colorado has shown that they can play, you know, these tight games in the playoffs.
Against a goalie such as...
Well, they, you know, like, they beat the Blues 3-2, you know, twice. You know, Mike Smith was putting on a goaltending clinic. Like Mike, you know, as bad as Mike Smith actually is, he was pretty spectacular in that series, you know. Even, like, he kept them in there. And then you look at, what was it, Connor Ingram, who decided that he was going to be Vasilevsky for a series in Nashville. Now, I know that, you know, Vasilevsky is Vasilevsky. Like, there's no argument about that. But Colorado finds a way. Like, Colorado has the capability of peppering 50 shots against on a consistent basis. I don't think Tampa Bay does.
Tampa Bay found a way down 2-0 in a series, 2-0 in a game. I think they can find a way to go to find and pick their chances to beat a worse goalie than they've gone up against, at least in the last.
Yeah, but Colorado's not going to give them these opportunities that the Rangers did, or that Florida did, or that Toronto did. Like, the defense that Colorado is going to produce doesn't allow for, like, you know, these slot chances, and it does, like, they don't allow for shots on goal. Like, Colorado right now, so they're averaging 40.7 shots per game. They're allowing 28.2. Tampa Bay, they're generating 32.5 shots per game, and they're allowing 31.9. So, like Colorado, they're like this offensive juggernaut that they keep going and they keep going. Like, the only way that Tampa Bay wins this series is if they get like 4 power plays a game, because the Colorado penalty kill is at 75%.
Like, I don't entirely agree with that, but we're running short on time, so I think we're going to have to table the rest of that. So you got Colorado in...
I'm going to say that Tampa does push it to 6, but I think that's kind of it.
I'm going to go Tampa, and I don't like picking games per se, but I'm going to go 7 because I think that's what's best for hockey.
Yeah.
Although, and for Colorado fans, I hate the sadness aspect of everything.
And I'm going to go with Cale Makar as my what is it called? The Conn Smythe. I know that's a hot take, but
I think it would. I'm thinking if Colorado wins the cup, it's maybe not got to be a goaltender in that case. But
well, if Colorado wins the cup, goalie's not winning the Conn Smythe because
it was a
half joke. They've split time, so
it was a half joke. Yeah. But I'd say unless Stamkos pops off for like 10 goals in 7 games. As much as I'd love to see him get the Conn Smythe, I think it would have to go to Vasilevsky in that case, especially. And yeah, so you said Colorado in 6, and I'm saying Lightning in 7. And with that, it's been another What's Cracking Wednesday. Thank you all for listening. If you could see the face that Adam just gave me. Be sure to check out our written work at thehockeywriters.com. And we are having a 20% off sale in our store. So go check that out in time for Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. You got Adam up in Canada at Adam K. Blatt. Myself, Sean, I am in the States at Raggio9124. Forgot my own Twitter handle. Good stuff, Sean. Thanks again. Have a great week.